Posts on the website of the International Monetary Fund do not usually go viral, but this week one did. We'll look at the week in social media in a few minutes. Have you heard about the Emoji Bible? But to the IMF post, it was titled "Neoliberalism Oversold?" with a big question mark, questioning the so-called neoliberal policies promoted by the IMF and Western countries, and it was written by IMF researchers. It argues that policies like privatization and opening markets to foreign competition have some benefits, but they also lead to inequality, which can hurt growth. Ben Norton wrote in Salon it was like reading the Pope declaring that there is no God. Now, the IMF has responded, saying the post has been widely misinterpreted and that the organization has been reevaluating its policies since the global financial crisis, but the process has not fundamentally changed the core of their approach. Simon Johnson is a professor at the MIT Sloan School of Management, and he served as chief economist at the International Monetary Fund in 2007 and 8. So, Simon, let's get right to it. You were there. What do you make of this?
Well, look, the IMF has shifted its thinking a lot over the past 20 years, particularly in the light of what happened in Asia in 1997, 1998. And when I was there in 2007, 2008, I would say that that process of reevaluation was underway. I didn't initiate it, but I did participate in it. I thought it was a pretty healthy process. And what you're seeing today in this article we're now discussing is a continuation of that reassessment.
I'm questioning it. Well, just back up and explain. What does it mean by saying the neoliberal policies? What does that mean?
All right. Well, I do think that the whoever put the headline on this IMF article might have oversold the headline as well as using the word oversold in the headline. Neoliberalism does refer to the idea that you can free up economies. You can, as you said, privatize assets, sell state enterprises. You can bring in more market determination. Freer markets was a big theme, for example, in Eastern Europe during the 1990s after the collapse of communism. And two key pieces are capital flows. Do you allow capital, money, to flow in and out of your country? And the IMF has now become much more skeptical about the general benefits of that, mm-hmm. although sometimes it's a good idea. And the other thing, which – and this is really very central to our concerns in the United States today even, mm-hmm. is fiscal austerity. When you've got a budget deficit and when you don't have a lot of overall pressure from the market, let's say your interest rates are low, people are willing to buy your debt domestically and around the world – how much emphasis should you put on fiscal austerity? Should you cut spending? Should you raise taxes? Should you rush to get the budget under control? Or now the IMF is saying, and I think it, on this dimension, to me, the article does represent a shifting of some important nuances. They're saying, slow down. Fiscal austerity, really not so important for some countries like the United States or the UK, for example, and allow the economy to grow. And as you grow, the debt should fall relative to GDP. But that would be a very gradual process.
Are they thinking there of Greece, for instance, which, you know, went with fiscal austerity, did not work?
Well, they don't say Greece. The word Greece is not mentioned in the article. But yes, I think Greece is very much on their minds. And I'm not sure, to be honest, that the IMF internally is in agreement among its own staff members about what happened in Greece and what should be done differently in other situations. But to many people on the outside, Greece does represent an unfortunate and extreme degree of fiscal austerity that has not been successful.
Well, and what do you think? I mean, the researchers, there's three of them. Again, you know, question much of the economic policy. So talk about money going in and out of countries. Give us an example of that. What are they talking about?
Well, short-term money, short-term capital flows, hot money, money that shifts day in, day out from U.S. to London, from London to Tokyo, from Tokyo to somewhere else. And particularly if it's going in and out of countries with weak institutions where they don't have strong political setup, where they don't have good financial regulation, some of those capital inflows can be destabilizing. And I think a lot of countries, particularly middle-income countries, have learned the hard way. Money comes in, there's a tremendous boom, some people become very rich. And that generates a lot of friction. Maybe that undermines political legitimacy. I think, though, the bigger issue is what it does to the financial system. And the piece that's actually still missing a little bit from the IMF thinking is financial regulation and the way in which you allow finance to get out of control in many situations, the way that leads to a great boom. Everyone feels good, but then you have a tremendous bust. And in that bust, a lot of people are driven down into poverty.
Well, is there another piece, too, that may correlate with the concern in this country now about trade? That, yes, you may have a boom in some parts, but a bust in others. You just said that money may flow into a poorer middle class country, and yet the money goes to the few, and maybe ultimately if there's a bust, more people are poor, and then if more people are poor, they're not buying more things, and so you're not getting the desired expansion that you wanted.
Well, it's certainly true that in the discussions we're having right now about trade in the United States, particularly the Trans-Pacific Partnership, the TPP, the issue of inequality absolutely comes up. So it is the case that the trade agreements, generally speaking, increase GDP, but many of them also create a lot of opportunities for relatively few people and perhaps cheaper goods for other people. So they may gain as consumers, but they may also lose their jobs. And the people who lose their jobs could, in principle, be compensated, and this is in every economics model, that the winners could compensate the losers and everyone would still be better off. But the central political reality in the United States is we do not compensate the losers. And if you just remember that and think about that, when you're thinking about trade, you understand why so many people are reluctant at this stage to support an agreement like TPP. Yeah.
Well, again, as we're understanding it, the policies that the IMF researchers are talking about, as you said, a flow of money into countries, increasing privatization of investments, these are the policies of Ronald Reagan, Margaret Thatcher. What happens now? What does this mean?
Well, it's a good question. I'm not sure it means very much, actually. I don't think the IMF is changing its ability or inclination to lend to countries. But you're right. If we go back to the 1980s in the US and in the UK, there was absolutely a view that growth was a thing to go for. Everything else could and would trickle down to other people and that a rising tide will lift all boats. Turns out that's not the right metaphor. And many people have got left behind. Median wages have not gone up. Many people have been pushed out of the middle class by what's happened in terms of technology change, as well as trade, as well as other developments such as the decline of trade unions over the past 25 years.
Simon Johnson, senior fellow at the Peterson Institute in Washington. He also served as chief economist at the International Monetary Fund in 2007 and 2008. Always a pleasure, Simon. Thank you.
Thank you.